Reading from the Hebrew book Kabbalah Lamatchil, Article of Freedom. You can find the same material in kabbalah.info/eng under Baal Sulam. You can ask questions at kab.tv. Relevant questions to the study material would be aired. Again, Article of Freedom. You can find it in kabbalah.info/eng. Before this article, I want to say that basically it's the most important article, we can say that, at least for the beginner. And also for the advanced student. As if we have freedom in our world, then we need to find out where it is. Because according to scientific research, we are all born with qualities, predetermined qualities. We become incorporated into educations and systems of society that we do not choose, which influence us. We see that a same person can be in Africa or in America or in Indonesia or in Russia, and it'll turn out a completely different person. And if we're talking about children, then what depends on the children when they are designed into life, and whatever exists within them also doesn't come from them, but they're born with it and they're influenced by society, and when they grow they're also inside a society that obligates them to dress in a certain way, to build a family in a certain way, and to eat in a certain way, and so on. In each and every state, if we listen to psychologists also, we will see here that our whole manner of behavior, the way we talk, the way we run, the way we walk, doesn't matter what we do, it is all based on examples we saw before. And it is never us. But everything we do is what we once saw as an example. As an example for how to behave. And at the end of life, a person who looks backwards says, was it really me? Did I really do that? But somehow I just went through certain occurrences. So who am I? And eventually people find out that they are within a blind faith, or not a blind faith, but something that does not depend on them. And then the main thing is to feel less of the bad things and feel more of the good things, if possible. And this is how they flow in the currents of life. But it's coming from frustration, despair, and seemingly the inability to see that within our life there is a little undiscernible instrument by which we are able to manage our development, our advancement, in a way that we reach the level of godliness, completeness, wholeness, eternity,
omnipotence.
Mm-hmm. Like the Creator. The instrument for that is hidden. It's very concealed. For something that is so great that there are really two ends here. Either you are nothing, you're completely activated, controlled, or you're omnipotent. Therefore, finding out, discovering this means to be free, to be eternal, to be happy, controlling, in control, is the most important thing in life, if it is possible. So the wisdom of Kabbalah explains to us, and Baal Salam here in the article, The Freedom, explains to us that it is possible to recognize this means within us for the point of our freedom. So let's see how to discover it. And without it, we're animals, beasts. As it says, everyone is like a beast, meaning that there's nothing in us besides following instructions of nature. And with this thing, we are equal to God. We both return to God. The freedom. Charut, carved on the stones. Do not pronounce it charut, carved, but rather charut, freedom, to show that they are liberated from the angel of death. These words need to be clarified, because how is the matter of reception of the Torah related to one's freedom from death? Furthermore, once they have attained an eternal body that cannot die through the reception of the Torah, how do they lose it again? Can the eternal become absent? Freedom of will. In order to understand the sublime concept, freedom from the angel of death, we must first understand the concept as it is normally understood by all mankind. It is a general view that freedom is deemed a natural law, which applies to all that is alive. Thus, we can see that animals that fall into captivity die when their freedom is robbed. And it is a true testimony that providence does not accept the enslavement of any creature. It is not for no good reason that humanity has struggled for the past several hundred years before it has attained a certain amount of freedom for the individual. But how is that possible? Animals have freedom? We just said that if everyone is like a beast, then it means that beasts are managed by nature. But it all depends on the measure of the awareness of man or beast. Because if I do not feel that I am activated, manipulated by someone, then I think I'm free. And if I'll discover that someone forces something upon me and manages me, then I'll feel that I'm not free. And I will want to exit this situation. Same thing with animals. If nature has constructed reality in such a way that an animal moves according to her natural instincts, and by that it feels free, then this is the meaning of freedom for this animal, even though in every little detail that happens to it, and its body and its movements and its surroundings are all determined by laws, and there is no freedom at all. But this boundary is concealed from the animal, and therefore it feels free. If we narrow down its boundary, then the animal feels it has a greater area than what it has now, a greater latitude. And in between these boundaries, it feels pressured, not free, and then it wants to burst out and reach in its awareness to the same state it had before, or to what the kind of freedom that nature gives it. We can see the same thing in plants. When a plant grows, you can put something over it or try to confine it, but it will grow in a way that will, in a detour, in order to surround it, around it. And the same thing with a baby. It thinks that it's free and it moves around and walks around. And same thing with us, the adults. It all depends on knowing the boundaries, whether I'm free or not free, if someone limits me or not. Therefore, some people are under a terrible regime and they feel themselves free because they don't feel those boundaries. And others have the whole world to do what they want, but that's too small for them. So, again, when we're talking about the animals or the examples of certain people, let's understand that all these things are relative to the recognition of the term freedom. Nessie says, it says that about the animals, when we take the freedom away from them, it is a testimony that the providence does not accept the enslavement of any creature. But maybe there's a different reason. What do you mean a different reason? Maybe there's a different reason because who said that precisely the providence does not accept the enslavement of any creature? According to the behavior, first of all, the judge has no more than his eyes to judge, to see. We see that if we take animals and we put them in a cage, then it makes them more ill, and eventually they become lost. You have to let every animal, and in general, every kind of creation, the place it deserves. It has the right to exist with respect to the boundaries that the providence gave it, and under these boundaries, it has the right to exist to begin with. And if someone comes into these boundaries, so it doesn't, the animal doesn't agree. You see how the animals fight for their territory, whether lions or cats or doesn't matter. Everyone has to have his own territory. You know, if you go into another's territory, you saw how cats fight, right? They can't because they feel that it's hurting them right away. Why does it care about this 2 meters territory if someone comes closer to it? No, it means that I'm not free. So, based on research, we can see that this thing is instilled in nature. It's not just among human beings coming from education, culture, policies, or you know, freedom of the country or something like that. No, we see that in animals, it is the same thing. There is such a natural law that we do not agree to be enslaved. And we are willing to agree if artificially we eliminate from ourselves that sensation of enslavement. Some people go into prison and they feel themselves home there after a while. They get used to it and they don't want to live. I feel good here. It's like a hotel. You know what I'm talking about, right? He is the head of the guards at prison. You said before that everything we do, even the slightest thing, comes from examples we saw in our lives. Now, we saw billions of examples. How do we choose the examples we follow? No, that's a different problem. If you know that your freedom, that your future depends on the examples that you're going to follow for your behavior, that's already development. So you have to know to which direction you're going to develop, and accordingly you choose the manners of behavior you want to undertake, to accept upon yourself, in order to then reach the goal. Let's say you want to become similar to the Creator. This is called Adam, from the word similar, to become similar to the Creator. So you have to receive examples from Him. So He gave you an example. He tells you, you have a society. In the relations of love thy friend as thyself, you will discover all my forms, qualities, and then when you'll be ready, you'll get to know me as well. It's like you go into some school for proper behavior, and they teach you, and afterwards you can get into a distinguished, respected place. And before I want to evolve, how does the child decide what example is right for him? That's the root of the soul. There's no free choice here. The free choice starts from the realization. The Creator puts man's hand on the good fate and tells him, take it. And then the good development is before him, if he wants it. We also have to ask whether there is freedom here, and to which extent, and where. I'm brought to the group. I start studying, and there's someone who loves studying. So for him, it's an experience, you know? It's a joy. And someone who likes being with others, you know, outside, they do such things as well. So he feels good. So if you're you're a social person, then it works for you. But if you're talking about choice, then he didn't choose it. So being absorbed in the society doesn't depend on him already. It depends on his inborn qualities. So that's not freedom as well. So where is freedom? Exactly where? That is what the article is coming to clarify.
Paragraph yet. Yet, the concept expressed in that word freedom remains unclear. If we delve into the heart of that word, there will be almost nothing left. For before you ask for one's freedom, before you seek one's freedom, you must assume that an individual in and of itself has that quality called freedom, meaning that he can act according to his own free choice. If we take any person, whatever qualities he may have, or preparations from childhood, from society, from the root of his soul, if he is educated or whatever, he will not discover what freedom is, because we always, through all kinds of tricks being played on us, all kinds of educational methods, we can expand or narrow one's life to in whatever boundaries we determine. And in the end, he'll accept them and feel that, yeah, this is me, that's my life. You can go to China or to Africa or to America or to whatever places and see people live in such different ways, in ways that are even worse than jail, and some that are, some ways you can just go mad by the abundance of options. It all depends on the way a person designs himself within. He may feel greater freedom by being limited in every way, or he may feel totally incarcerated in a dungeon, immobilized in a state situation where he's got everything in front of him, open in all directions. So we're not talking about freedom on the level of this world, because here we are completely operated upon and act according to our corporeality, our beastliness, which can be programmed and built. And this animal can always agree to take upon itself all kinds of boundaries and in them feel free. So I can always err in life. And in the end, the protective force of the body, the ego, always brings me to a state where I don't feel pressures or limitations. That's why we can see people who, even though they decline from their seemingly good degree, comfortable degree, to lower degrees, they get used to it and agree and don't feel that they are limited, because our egos, our protective force, doesn't let us degrade ourselves. And hence, we have no concept of free choice, of freedom in our world. It's all relative. This is why he says this concept is blurred, unclear in us, and we can't depict its boundaries. Every society, every culture, every time in history has its own limitations and boundaries and definitions. And in the end, we see it's all completely unscientific, unsound, even unsubstantiated. Subtitle, section, pleasure and pain. However, when we examine the acts of an individual, we shall find them compulsory. He is compelled to do them and has no freedom of choice. In a sense, he's like a stew cooking on a stove. It has no no choice but to cook. Providence has harnessed life with two chains, pleasure and pain. The living creatures have no freedom of choice, choosing pain or rejecting pleasure. And the only advantage man has over animals is that he can aim at a remote target. That is, he can agree to a certain amount of current pain out of choice of future benefit or pleasure to be attained after some time. But in fact, there is no more than a seemingly commercial calculation here, meaning that the future benefit or pleasure seems greater than the current pain or agony that they have agreed to take on presently. There is only a matter of deduction here, that the pain is deducted from the aspired pleasure, and there remains some extra. Thus, only pleasure is extended. And so it sometimes happens that one is tormented because one did not find the pleasure one attained to be the surplus one had hoped for, compared to the agony one suffered. And therefore, one is in deficit. It is all as merchants do. Meaning, in the end, because we are feeling beings, and under that feeling comes the will to receive, it aims us to achieve the best possible feeling from what is at our disposal. So we have no choice whether we want to or not. And however we confuse ourselves with our minds is not going to help us. All of our calculations will be about how to achieve pleasures, fulfillments, something that is better than what I had before. And perhaps what I had before is rest instead of chasing pleasures. Because in this resting, when we sleep or do nothing, we feel greater pleasure than the pleasures that perhaps are somewhere out there. It all depends on a person and on one's assumption, on one's examination and weighing of things. But they're always, even in terms of time, if we go for some effort or pain, it's only because the pleasure shines for me and I feel it now, in the present, as existing, being present and filling me already. He says man's advantage over beast is that man can calculate for the future, to bring the future pleasures closer as if they're happening now. And we can weigh them according to the effort that I have to make now. So if I have some surplus, which makes it worthwhile to go for it, including the confidence and doubts and all that, then we go for it, or we don't. It all depends on the calculation a person makes for himself. Of course, there are values you have to receive from society, from books, something about how to appreciate the effort, the reward. But in the end, we only act out of that. So there is no free choice here. There are only calculations. And we see some of that in animals too. Although for them it acts instinctively. In us, it acts according to a calculation. So, hence the question, isn't our calculation the same instinctive calculations as for animals? Animals collect food for winter, for example, or they build things that they don't need for now, but for later. So, that too is in order to gain some future benefit. So what's the difference between a person who does that? How's that different? There is no difference. It just seems that, it seems to us that we are freer because we are under many, many pieces of information that we get from the environment, and we're unaware of how we're affected by everything. So it seems to us that out of the many possibilities, many influences, as a result of that, we think we're free, and animals don't have that question. They just act on an engine that evokes in them these actions, and that's how it works in them. In other words, we are under greater concealment in our beastly functionality, and that's it. That's why he says there is nothing more than a calculation here for the future, for the present, and all those things. All those calculations are within the will to receive, and everything is governed, and everything is decided on. And when it all is said and done, there is no difference here between man and beast. And if that is the case, there is no free choice whatsoever, but a pulling force attracting toward any bypassing pleasure and rejecting from painful circumstances. And providence leads them to every place it chooses by means of these two forces, without asking their opinion in the matter. Even the determination of the type of pleasure and the benefit are entirely out of one's own free choice, but rather follow the desire of others. For example, I sit, I dress, I speak, I eat. I do all these not because I want to sit that way or talk that way or dress that way or eat that way. I do it because others want me to sit, dress, talk, and eat that way. It is all according to the desires of society, not according to my own free will. Furthermore, in most cases, I do these things against my will, for I would feel a lot more comfortable behaving simply, not carrying any burden, but I am chained in every movement to the flavors and manners of others, which make up the society. Any questions about that? Yes? That's in general, but still, in society, there are all kinds of people who seem like exceptionals. They behave in an exceptional way. They're not crazy, but they just decide they are even more a slave to society, even more so. Because if you're normal, then you're normal, you know, normative, just like everyone else. They don't pay attention to it. But these guys pay attention so they can separate themselves, so they can present themselves as special. They're trying to attract attention. So they're even more enslaved to society, you understand? Sometimes you see new people come here with earrings, with a ponytail, all kinds of things. Do you remember C? How he came here? Such a good-looking guy. Do we have any footage of that? We took some, right? He had this tiny beard here. You didn't have an earring? C said, "Here, I had all kinds of things. I remember this beautiful purse you had, like a woman's purse, with a leather purse with embroidery and all kinds of stuff." So you could see that this was a special person. Special. Okay, we're not going to talk about him. He was paying attention to how special, differentiated from society he could be, because he was dependent on it. In other words, he had to distinguish himself, and in that way he could examine how and in what way he could differentiate himself from it, so people would appreciate him and understand him and accept him in this or that way. By the way, there's a lot of cleverness here. You know how many researches and studies and there are here about clothing and external expressions. The whole of industry works on that. The fashion industry works on that. It indicates a person who is more dependent on society. A person who is not dependent on society doesn't care. He goes like everyone else. He doesn't want to draw a bad attitude from people. And he doesn't like to stink, you know, so he doesn't want to be condemned or contempted. So he walks like everyone else, clean and simple. You understand? So Kabbalah shows us where the desire to decorate ourselves comes from, because any decoration comes from deficiency. Nukva has to decorate herself because she's deficient. This decoration is called Masach and Ol Chazer. by having a big desire. He needs to correct it. Understand? So, and greater people don't pay attention to that. And you see that now the world is progressing, and people understand that there's nothing to it, as opposed to the 20th century or even the 19th century, humanity leaped, as opposed to history. There were times where, according to one's dresses, you could say who the person was. You were forbidden to wear this kind of hat, that kind of hat. You had to wear this clothes or that clothes. Each social group was marked by a certain costume. Today, it doesn't exist. And people don't appreciate it anymore. People are beginning to realize or advancing towards some demand for truth. So, he says that in that, of course, there's no free choice. Nothing. Especially in how to present yourself before everyone. Here, society determines everything. What did you want to ask?
Jacques asks, the process we go through where we realize our lack of choice, then we also realize our will to receive as an animal, meaning I gradually discern that I have no freedom of choice. It narrows down and down until it disappears, and in the same extent I realize my will to receive. That's true. By researching reality and seeing that I'm as an animal, it wears off the taste in being something special in terms of how I dress, or I dress the way I do, only with respect to what I need from what the audience needs from me. If they want to see me in this way, I dress this way. They want to see me in another way, I dress in another way. This is not how I want to show my uniqueness. There's no issue here. Vice versa. It is all towards them so they can feel comfortable with me.
On the contrary.
And by that, of course, I diminish the use of my will to receive. But again, it comes on the account of something greater. Because if a person reaches a state where he doesn't need all those external signs, then it's a sign that he's attracted to the internal signs. Also, according to the same will to receive. Abel from Mexico asks, if a person asks, how will the Kabbalah liberate me when he's disseminating? What do I respond to him? If Kabbalah will liberate him from being a slave, by dissemination, he becomes incorporated with the desires of the others, and he needs the desires in order to be attracted to the goal, because his personal desire is not sufficient for anything. It's only sufficient in order to wake up for the first time. After one is brought to the group, and one can be awakened, can be in this awakening, and I know this personally for many years. But this personal awakening doesn't let him realize himself yet to any extent. He prepares himself. Some souls need to go through it this way, and some go through it another way. I yearned for something for many years until I was brought to a group, to the issue of connection, dissemination, the teacher, and everything. Before that, years after years, I was on my own. And those years when I was on my own were not years of actual spiritual development. I had to fulfill some debts, pay some debts, let's say. Doesn't matter what. Why? Because the desire within a person is not enough in order to penetrate to spirituality. even into the period of concealment, the preparation time. One doesn't enter the preparation time, because in order to be in the preparation time, he already needs to feel darkness to somewhat extent. Not the regular darkness as in depression that normal people feel, but the darkness coming from the posterior of the light. And in that, he needs to become incorporated with the others, in dissemination, in the group. When he becomes integrated with desires that are similar to him, by attaching them to himself, joining them to himself, and going further forward, even based on the study and dissemination, not really bonding with them with heart and soul. But that is already sufficient to be in this group in order to absorb additional desires from them. And with these additional desires that he absorbs, he feels his attitude, his relation to the light, to the Creator, to godliness, to spiritual advancement, only in this point. In his point in the heart, there's only the impression that he had before. It stays the way it is. This is your cell in the body of Adam HaRishon. It doesn't grow. The more you connect other desires, other cells to it, this is how you grow. That's all. So, dissemination that you're asking about is really the instrument for advancement, because by that you connect, you attach desires that will somewhat be interested, they will read a little bit, they will know a bit about the truth. To this extent, you connect them to you, and this is how you advance. Another question that we received: what freedom does a person have when he feels complete darkness? That is the point of freedom. Because in this, he is now capable, according to his preparation, according to the effort, to do some action that it isn't to exit the darkness, but to determine by his integration with the other forces that this darkness is not darkness. That it isn't darkness, it is light. And that light of bestowal shines to him. And towards his vessels, he feels it as darkness. There is a nice example of languages. Hebrew is a face, and Aramaic is the posterior. The backside, achap. Therefore, the Zohar is written both in Hebrew and in Aramaic, and we use a lot of Aramaic because there's an issue here of talking through the posterior language, through Aramaic, or through the face, through Hebrew. For instance, the Babylonian Talmud, since it was written in Babylon, and Aramaic was the spoken language in Babylon, it was written, therefore it was written in Aramaic. And there are more issues here. So, an example is the word light, ol. In Aramaic, it is called ota, which means darkness. So, it depends on a person whether, how he discovers the light, as day or night, as light or darkness. What does it mean? It means that you see darkness, and if you see darkness, that is light for sure. Only on the condition that you'll have a little of the quality of bestowal, you discover it as light. And if you don't have the quality of bestowal, that light in its posterior looks as darkness to you. Just bring a bit of light of chasadim on your behalf, and you will see that the world is filled with light. The light doesn't change. It's in complete rest. If you have an equivalence with it, you feel it as light. If you don't have an equivalence with it, you feel darkness. It all depends on the kli. Yes. question coming from Tel Aviv. What does it mean, eternity and wholeness? How is it expressed? And all those Kabbalists who went through harsh life and situations, they felt complete and whole and eternal, of course. Of course. And in order to raise them to an even greater level of wholeness and eternity, they were hunted and beaten. In order to transcend that, and above that, discover the love of the Creator. These are words. Just words. It's better to go back to what's relevant for us, to the search of freedom, and that action is the first thing. This is how a person starts growing. If you didn't find the point of freedom, you have nothing to do. You can just carry on the same way until the end of your life, and that's it, like all animals and like all people. But if you do find that point of freedom, then you already have a point, and like a leverage by which you can change your life. So you tell me, where is my freedom of choice? On the other hand, if we assume that the will has no freedom, then we are all like machines, operating and creating through external forces which make it act the way it does. That means that we are all incarcerated in the prison of providence, which, using these two chains, pleasure and pain, pushes and pulls us to its will, to where it sees fit. It turns out that there seems to be no such thing as selfishness in the world, since no one here is free and stands on his own two feet. I'm not the owner of the act, and I'm not the performer, because I want to perform, but I'm performed upon in a compulsory manner, without consideration of my own opinion. Therefore, reward and punishment become instincts. Of course they become instinct, because if there's no action, no choice on behalf of man, if all our actions are predetermined, if I'm obligated, forced to do everything, whether for the better or for the worse, the worst thing I can do is because the body manipulates me in a way that it's worthwhile for me to do it, and then I do. Hence, there's no reward or punishment. What do you give a reward for or a punishment? Meaning, all the things we go through, and we seem they seem to for us to be free, and we can act for the better or for the worse, or and we arrange some network of relations where we have a reward for good things or a punishment for bad things or success or not success. All these things are imagination. It's something I imagine to myself. It's a complete lie, false. It comes from the lack of seeing the complete picture. Then it seems to me that I as if I'm free, and as if I have a reward or a punishment. But in truth, there is nothing here besides nature's action over the desire that is completely managed by nature. And it is quite odd, not only for the Orthodox who believe in his providence and can rely on him and trust that he aims only for the best in every act.
If I'm Orthodox, I'm saying, you know what, I don't care, there's a higher force. He did that way. He did that to me. That's the way I was taught. I keep those things. There's reward and punishment for it. There isn't. You tell me whatever. Doesn't matter. But if there's a higher force, I just do what I was told and what's written about it. Leave me alone. At least I have someone who's in charge. And I'm just playing it small. So there's justification here. Whatever happens, praise the Lord. And even if I'm not doing anything freely, it's not a problem. I can always shut my eyes and ascribe everything to the Creator. By that, the religious seemingly benefit because they can say whatever happens, there's a creator, and I'm just little me. But the secular here are in a situation where they don't understand how they can. We don't understand how they can tolerate that situation once they discover they're like animals. An Orthodox person can say, okay, so I'm a beast. But a kosher beast, at least. That's it? Yeah. No, seriously. It's considered being naive about it or innocent. There's justification to your existence this way. But for a secular, what justification is there for your existence as an animal? What is the freedom you're so proud of that you have and religious don't? That you're free to do. To do what? Those are governed by nature, and those are governed by nature. So, those people think they're kosher beasts, and you're a non-kosher beast. So even in that, from the perspective of Kabbalah, there's no advantage either way. Here, we should just turn to true spiritual discernments. So what does it say with respect to the secular? It is even stranger to those who believe in nature, since according to the above, we are all incarcerated by the chains of blind nature with no awareness or accountability. If he is relating to a nature, to a force that has no mind or calculation, meaning it's not some higher force, it's not... How should I put it? Some higher intellect, perhaps? And we, the chosen species, one of mind and knowledge, have become a toy in the hands of blind nature, leading us astray and who knows where. Yep, that's what the materialistic approach turns you into a beast, as nothing more than a beast, and if you really study everything, and see that there is no free choice. And we can see that in our world more and more so every day, that we're incapable of doing anything here, that these laws pressure us and close us from all sides in a little bubble, and that we're all dependent on each other, dependent on our egos, and can't rise above it, that we can't do say anything about tomorrow in any way. And all of that brings us into a general crisis, and then we have nothing left, nothing to live for. Because if a person begins to understand that he's entirely influenced by forces and has no personality of his own, then it's as if there's no justification for your existence. An animal exists to provide man with something. But why does man exist? To make the world dirtier. No other reason left. From here comes that's the reason for the despair that's increasing in everyone. It's because people can't find justification for their own existence. The goal, the free choice, where I am, all these things remain unanswered. Yes. Jan from Moldova is asking, do we also not have choice in our thoughts or actions, or is it only about thoughts, or is it only about actions? In everything, how can I think freely if my desire isn't free? How can I have free thought if I grew up in a certain society that taught me to think a certain way and relate to things in a certain way and take this and that information into account and think of this or that taboo that I subconsciously have to follow? We, in our thought or in our will or in our decision-making process, we have nothing that is free. There is no me here. There's a machine operated and operating according to the way it was programmed before birth and after birth, and now by the impact of its surrounding reality. And there's nothing in that machine that can suddenly jump independently. And my question is even further than that. Describe a situation where there's anything that's free. Where from? If it's not from a drop of semen that was then nurtured and nourished by external forces, forces of still vegetative, animated speaking. What does it mean, free? Where from? You tell me. How are you different than this piece of plastic? It was also made by forces according to a certain pattern. You were also made in this way. And science is discovering it very clearly. And we also understand. What's free in you? Tell me, what's free in you? What is free? You're saying this, yeah, but when I see the world is ready, but I can relate to it freely. Where do you get this program from internally of how to relate to the world? What does it mean, free? Did it fall on you from some planet? How can it be free that's not dependent on nature? And you're a product of nature. You tell me, what is free? I can't even imagine such a thing in the whole universe. That is what? Outside of the universe? Not a result of everything that's happening? How can you even picture? How is there even a question of freedom of choice, of anything that's free? Anything that's free, something that's free means it's out of this world. In short, that's the answer. It's not from this world. If this, such a thing exists in a person, then perhaps this is free in that person. What does it mean that it's free? It's from another world. And maybe it's not free too. But it's considered foreign to this world. Free from this world. You understand? That's it. It's on condition. Perhaps it's a different nature, a second nature that exists in me and conquers me and tears me apart, whatever. With respect to the first nature that I was born in and I exist in as a beast, then perhaps I can say I'm free from the first nature. If I can switch to the next nature or there's some relation between them. But with respect to the second nature, there's the same question. What does it mean that it's free? Turns out that there I'm not free too. Either I'm slave to this or to that. And in between, we will see where we find true freedom. Because without it, why live? There I'm an angel, holy beast. That's the meaning of an angel. And in this world, I'm, you know, they're all like beasts. And in between the two worlds is where we find the point of freedom. We'll see later. It's the middle third of Tiferet and all that. We'll get to it. The freedom is ahead of us. Before conclusion, a few messages. We invite you to stay with us after the lesson and watch Good Morning, the morning show that will start your day with much light and hope. Rav Leitman's lectures at Bet Kabbalah are held Tuesdays at 7 p.m. at 112 Jabotinsky Street, Petah Tikva. Admission is free. Ask the Kabbalist. Answers to what you always wanted to know. Every Thursday, 9 p.m. on Channel 98 and on the Kabbalah channel. For any questions, call 1-700-509-209 or at www.kab.tv. This concludes our lesson. All the best, good day, and good night.